When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I would not describe the film by and large as a comedy. It's quite a, you know, there's lots of death, drugs and permed hair, you know, it's serious stuff.
Yeah, it's quite hard to categorize. You couldn't just, you know, put it in a box. It's, you know, it's got a bit of humor, it's very dark, it's almost like cut like a thriller at times, or like a certainly a very fast-paced crime action.
Welcome one, welcome all. This is episode 53. You're listening to Flicks Watch a Podcast.
It's Helen.
And it's Kobe here.
And today we are joined by Adam.
Hello.
And Chris.
Hello.
And we will be talking about the film City of God.
Well, I hope you enjoy the show, guys. Remember, please visit us online at flickswatcher.tv. Come to our Twitter account at flickswatcherpod. And please go to iTunes, subscribe and review.
All films featured in the podcast were available to stream on Netflix UK at the time of recording, and please be aware there will be spoilers and some language that may offend. Hello and welcome to this episode of Flicks Watch a Podcast. Today we are joined by Chris and Adam. If you'd like to say hello and tell us about your podcasts that you do, and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. So my name is Adam Woodward. I'm the digital editor of Little White Lies magazine. And we also do a podcast called Truth and Movies, which I sometimes am on.
Hi, I'm Chris. I'm host of a podcast called Easy Riders Raging Podcast, which is a podcast about classic films. We spent the last year just talking exclusively on 1960s films. So lots of different films of all shapes and sizes.
So tell us a bit more about, because I've been obviously listening to your show before we come in here. Mm-hmm. If the 60s is actually quite fruitful. There's quite a lot of decent... a variety of films there, starting with The Jungle Book and Mary Poppins.
Oh yeah, we've got Disney films, we've got Bond, yeah. We've got early horror, we've got French New Wave, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, Psycho. There's many more films than you actually think, actually. Yeah. We've just wrapped up our year on 60s films and we're just prepping a year on 70s films.
Okay.
So yeah, just the next stage on. But yeah, all classic films, just one film at a time.
Yeah, fantastic. Have you got any favourite 60s films that spring to mind, Adam?
I don't know why this just sprang to mind, but I was thinking of Bonnie and Clyde and that kind of kicking off the new American kind of wave of cinema in the 60s.
Yeah, yeah, very key film.
Is that something you've reviewed in yours?
We have done that one, yes.
Yeah. Mm. And how did it go down?
It still holds up. It's still a great watch, yeah, yeah.
It's quite interesting because some of those bigger films in the 60s, because you just had to shoot them properly, they still tend to hold up quite well, don't they? Or very well.
Yeah.
A lot of dubbing, though. We found lots of people are dubbed, especially if there's songs, everyone's dubbed. Mm. They dub the singing, they dub the dialogue. I'm pretty sure they dub the dancing, but, you know, it's hard to tell.
Do you think that's just a bit of a hangover from the way Hollywood was the machine and the whole filmmaking?
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Did you have a favourite? Was there a favourite? Or I suppose there's quite a lot to pick from. Top three from the 60s?
I really enjoyed watching West Side Story because I'd never seen it before. Mm. So I guess the podcast was a mixture of rewatching films we watched before that we liked and trying to see some classics we'd not seen. So watching West Side Story or watching 7 Up, the British documentary, they were some of the highlights just because they were films I'd always meant to watch that I was getting watched and I was, oh yeah, really appreciating.
Awesome. Well, the Bonnie and Clyde reference you talked about kind of ties in with crime in a way, which links us to City of God. This is a tenuous segue.
But
Chris, you chose City of God. Can you tell us why you chose it and give us a brief synopsis?
Well, due to my podcast being about classic films, I deliberately tried to pick a modern film. It did strike me later that the film was 15 years old.
Yeah, it's not so modern.
Yeah, but in my mind, that's recent because I'm nearing middle age, I guess. So especially if you saw my music tastes, they would back that up. Modern is circa 2002. But yeah, it's a crime film set in the slums of Rio in the late 60s, early 70s. It's about a photographer called Rocket who's growing up amidst a world of crime. Yeah. And it was a film I really loved when it came out. Watched it several times at the cinema. bought the DVD, but it was a film I'd kind of forgotten about, if I'm honest. I hadn't watched it in about a decade, so I kind of wanted to see if it had held up. And I do remember recommending this film to a lot of people, and I kind of like the idea that maybe somebody would listen to this who hadn't seen it and check it out.
Yeah, well, fair enough. Mm. What are your thoughts, Adam?
Yes, I was actually just going to ask you, why had you not picked a classic film from the 60s? But then I was, as a sort of follow-up question almost, would you consider this to be a classic modern film?
I think it's too recent to be classic, I think. Well, potentially.
So what, in your copious notes there, can you remember? Well, I was going to say, can you remember, but when did it come out?
2002.
I think I saw this film first time in college, when I was in college.
Yeah,
yeah,
it was
the same.
It was at a point where the world cinema that I had been watching up to that point was a lot of the sort of French New Wave stuff, proper like canon, you know. And this was, as a modern piece of world cinema, was quite a kind of new thing for me. And I remember being really blown away by it. It's got this energy and this vibrancy to it, in just the editing and the cinematography especially. And it was a real eye-opener to a new world I just didn't know anything about.
Yeah, absolutely.
I guess I saw it at the Aberystwyth Art Centre Cinema when it came out.
Is that where you went to university?
It was, yes.
Yeah.
I used to, if you ushered, it was a very small cinema, you used to get to go and see the films for free. So I used to do that quite a lot. Again, I saw it then and probably saw it on DVD probably about 5 years after that, but hadn't revisited it again since. And unusually, we were posed three films. But this was the one that came out, and originally I was a bit like, do I want to see it again? But I'm glad that I did revisit it.
Yeah.
Because, it's just dazzling, I think, is what I thought at the time, and still think it's a remarkable piece of filmmaking that crosses quite a few sort of genres, because it is sort of loosely based on real events as well, which you kind of forget about that when you're watching a little bit.
And both yourself and Adam have talked about how beautiful this looks. And the cinematographer at the moment, right now, as we're recording, is the Camera Image Festival, which is the festival that celebrates cinematography in Poland. And the cinematographer behind this, Cesar Szaloni, won the Best Cinematographer for City of God for that festival in 2002. And it's one of the things I didn't really appreciate, how well films are made when I was kind of watching this. And like yourself, Adam, it was my foreign film had been kind of, I'm going to say it, basically
boring. Stuffy, a bit boring and
limited.
Stuffy.
Well, tends to have like, there might be some nudity in this. and things like Laine.
A bit French.
It tends to be French, yeah. And things like Laine. So this came on board and was like, oh, actually, other films in different languages are fucking awesome as well. And it's one of the main tenets of me saying to people, go and see foreign films. This and Amelie are the two kind of films I hold up as like, go and watch this because it's amazing. And so many people still don't like watching films because of subtitles, and it really kind of pisses me off.
I think it's interesting you bring up Amelie, because that's a film which adopts this really heightened visual style. Mm. And City of God does something similar. I wouldn't actually describe it as a beautiful film, but I think it's very brash, but very striking as well. And I just love the way it kind of contrasts that with the reality of the story and the, you know, the socioeconomic background. And it's a subject which could be treated and handled in a lot of different ways. Mm. And I think the way he does it with a lot of sincerity and affection for the characters as well.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a bit about the characters, because
I mean, who doesn't love Rocket? I mean, how can you not like Rocket?
To be fair, I think he is a slightly passive hero. Like I say, the film's chiefly about him, but it's really about the wide variety of residents in the area, or if not the area itself. And I enjoyed rewatching. We'll get back later to what we thought of him, but I did kind of want him to be a bit more involved, possibly. It's wrong to say I slightly wanted him to be in a bit more danger. Like at the end, he goes back in, but I felt like he needed to be forced. I don't know. I want things to be a bit more dangerous. I don't know why.
But we see quite clearly and many times the downsides of being involved in the danger. Mm. There's people that held guns. A lot of them didn't make it to the end of the film.
I mean, he's sort of there as the observer. He is the photographer there, so he's kind of always on the kind of periphery.
He's our guide into the world.
Yeah. So he's our main protagonist in this book, and he's surrounded by a lot of bad people.
Nut jobs.
Yeah.
But a lot of those kind of people will grab our attention slightly more because they're bigger characters. Mm. So possibly the performances that struck me the most weren't necessarily him. Not that he wasn't solid in the role and it wasn't a well-written character. Just kind of, there's a lot of stuff going on. There's lots of stories, lots of characters, and he's the link between them. Mm-hmm. But some of them took my attention a bit more, perhaps.
So give us someone who took your attention more than Rocket.
Well, the person that got my attention the most, there's a little kid that's crying. Do you remember the bit? There's a bit where a kid is possibly about to get shot or not.
Oh, yeah.
It was like an Oscar-winning performance. Like, I really thought that kid might have gotten shot because he was so blooming believable. Do you know the bit? It was just like a proper, like, intense... I don't know the kid's name, the actor's name.
It's a real knife-edge moment, that, isn't it? Because you just don't know.
Be like, how did they get that performance
out
of
him? Well, I know, because I was doing some research.
We could say you were there.
And basically, the acting coach just told the kid to think of sort of like their worst pain or their worst fear and transfer that into their foot, and they got that kind of performance.
Oh, wow.
So this is a hell of a performance.
So this is after the kid got shot, you mean?
The whole scene, the leading up to afterwards, the whole time I was completely like engaged, and it was just such a performance.
Because it might be worth setting up that scene because it's one of the harder sections of the film to rewatch. And in The City of God, there's a few different levels in there. Rocket is probably a middling level and everyone likes him.
Yep.
At the top, you have the gangs who are more well-established, but I feel they're, you know, 25 is their upper ceiling of age. And at the bottom...
If that.
And underneath them, they're the runts. They're the runts, the upstarts who feel they...
They're like 7 or 8. And yeah. Carrying a
terrifying.
Piece.
But menacing.
No, terrifying, yeah.
And one day the gang of young adults kind of gets pissed off with the runts and says, right, we're going to sort you guys out because you're pissing us off. And this is when one of the runts gets shot.
Yeah, they basically get these two kids and they say, well, you're going to be shot. Do you want to be shot in the hand or the foot?
Mm.
And these kids are like 5 and they're getting given this Sophie's choice. But it's such a compelling scene. It's, you know, properly heartbreaking scene.
Yeah, I wonder how true it is to life as well. Because I think you take a lot of it at face value, or at least I certainly did the first time I saw the film. And rewatching it, I was like, you know, I wonder how much license he's taken here with you know, stories he's heard from the streets and from some of the characters and cast members even. It's based loosely on kind of true events. But
yeah, several of the cast were from the area.
Yeah. Yeah.
So not particularly trained actors, and they were brought in on that. So none of the performances in it feel kind of fake or out of place. They all feel very authentic.
Oh yeah, there's not a performance off across the board, really. I completely bought into everyone in the characters and completely bought into the world. I'm not quite sure how many animals were killed during the making of the film. I didn't stop to wait to the end of the credits to see, but I've got no doubt, because there's animals wandering in that shot at all times.
Well, the start scene, the chicken actually goes underneath the car.
They must have lost so many chickens, definitely. They ate oil though, so.
I've actually been to Rio and I've been on a favela tour. This was after the City of God. I didn't go to the City of God's favela, but it felt like when I was there, that if you know someone there and you're not part of the violence, then you can be welcomed.
Mm-hmm.
But we could see people as they're walking around that clearly had guns on them, mm-hmm. and some quite big guns kind of badly hidden underneath their t-shirts.
Just average people, not police.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Just to be clear,
just not police. And so I think there's that menacing undertone straight away that if you're involved, and this is why you can see like Rocket, because he's, I guess, would be a civilian. He was left alone by everyone else surrounding him.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just like, yeah, in fact, you know how to use a camera, take pictures of us and put it in a newspaper. You're a good guy. We like you. And he's kind of not in any danger.
Mm.
How much did that trip meet your expectations, or how kind of accurate was it to the way it's depicted in the film?
Well, I didn't see any gunfire.
But just the good. general,
yeah, that's always a plus.
The general vibe of the place, I guess.
The general vibe was awesome. And you could see how people were struggling. Mm. I mean, this is set in the 70s. When I went there, it was just after this film came out. So people were in tiny, tiny rooms and tiny houses. but at the same time had PlayStation 3s and they had mobile phones and siphoning the power off the grid. You could tell they weren't paying for it and all the kind of all these things were going on. It was super vibrant in there.
Because, you know, the film is, the violence and the poverty is there and there's no getting past that. But it's also a film that's an incredible, as I say, energy to it. And there's so much life in it. And that, you know, they have fun. There's like, they go to the disco and there's... Yeah.
And they hang out at the beach. Exactly, and stuff.
I'd love to have gone to one of those discos. There's Barney Funk discos, they're called. Mm. But certainly went to the beach and that's so much fun to hang out on any beach in Rio. It's a super cool place to be.
But like you mentioned the energy, you definitely feel an influence of, well, two people in particular, you feel a lot of influence from Martin Scorsese, who's got that kind of energy in his films that kind of get you all the way through, and a lot of Tarantino as well, which I guess were two of the big draws, I guess, whether I was aware of them at the time, aware of them or not when this came out, but those were the films I've been watching in my teenage years. So when this came out, it was kind of like an international version of that, I guess.
It just sort of slotted in almost. Like. Mm.
Yeah. Well, it's got that non-linear storytelling to it as well, where we sort of have flashbacks and flash forwards, which managed to cover, what, 20, nearly 30 years in a remarkably short time through fantastic editing and sort of storytelling, particularly how you find out what happened to the history of the apartment.
Yeah.
Done in 2 minutes of about 15 years of what's happened.
But doesn't that feel very Tarantino-esque?
Yeah.
And you definitely get that kind of vibe.
It's got a bit of Danny Boyle in there as well, I think.
It's a train spotting kind of thing. Yeah.
Or even a hint of Slumdog Millionaire
as well.
It's got a very vibrant Slumdog Millionaire vibe to it as well.
And I picked up more than a little bit of Boogie Nights as well, that sort of 70s set crime thing with like a strand of comedy running through it, a sort of dark sense of humour that's on the cusp of the film.
It does, there's
some
two sides.
Very funny moments in it, which contrast with the extremely horrible moments, which when I was watching this reminded me of another film that we're quite big fans of that we reviewed, Beast of No Nation.
Sure.
Which... has the same kind of the way it's filmed and certain scenes are really kind of dreamy and magical. And yet there's extreme horror, violence and
real
nastiness.
Life. Yeah, true life violence.
But then really sweet, funny moments and kind of it's the same loss of childhood and similar sort of themes in this really, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I guess a runt of trying to grow up to get to a ceiling age of 25. And yeah, they're getting shot when they're 5 years old, like you said, Chris.
You imagine the ceiling is getting lower with each passing generation. That's the impression I get. Mm. I hate to think how young they get when they, you know, 3 year olds with. It does make me think of the song "Kids with Guns" by Gorillaz.
Yeah, the Gorillaz. Yeah,
exactly. Again, because my musical it was 2002.
It's one of my favorite albums ever. Mm. Adam, any characters that stood out for yourself?
I think we've named quite a few of them. I think some of them, to me, sort of do blur into. Not the background, but there's a certain like group of them.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a rogues gallery is maybe the wrong term there. But yeah, certainly some of the younger female characters stand out.
Well, because there's not that many of them. Because
there's not that many of them. And I think they play quite an interest. If you kind of view the film as a bit of a coming of age story as well, like they play quite an important role, certainly later on in the film when we meet the characters and they're slightly older.
I think when it first starts out, I remember first seeing it, I just thought it was set in favela, so there'd be crime and stuff, but it did seem like this is Rocket trying to get off this girl and it'd be the story of a traditional kind of coming of age and getting into a relationship kind of vibe, which didn't happen.
No.
Don't go into it expecting a romantic comedy.
No, yes. Sorry, guys.
I mean, it wouldn't even... I mean, like we said, there's funny things in there, but I would not describe the film by and large as a comedy. It's quite a serious, you know, there's lots of death, drugs and permed hair, you know, it's serious stuff.
Yeah, it's quite hard to categorize. You couldn't just, you know, put it in a box. It's, you know, it's got a bit of humor, it's very dark, it's almost like cut like a thriller at times, or like certainly a very fast-paced crime action film.
Yeah,
but like there's romantic elements as well.
But its pace and its style are probably its chief attributes, I think. Maybe, you know, it's a very stylish, slickly told film.
Yeah.
Any characters for you, Helen, that stick out in your mind?
Well, Knockout Ned. I didn't realise that was Serge George.
She was George.
Yeah, from The Life Aquatic.
Yeah, it was him.
Because he did the soundtrack for this film.
He did a soundtrack for this and for Life Aquatic.
Yes, Life Aquatic soundtrack is dynamite. But yeah, that's him, yeah.
Yeah, he plays quite an influential part. He's introduced earlier on, and in the kind of like nice narrative style, they sort of say more of that later. And he kind of features quite heavily in sort of second half of the film, or kind of the third act.
Yeah.
And
so Knockout Ned was one of the civilians who wasn't touched.
Yeah, who eventually is led down the path of guns and violence. And I guess you can probably guess how it ends up for him, but he becomes sort of a bit of a hero there as well.
Yeah. But he has to compromise his values, I guess, is his arc.
It's, I think that's quite an important point, actually, because we to see how someone turns and goes into that kind of into the gang side of things when he's been on the good side of things is actually quite an important story to have told in this in this, and obviously like I said, it doesn't end well for him.
It doesn't end well for a lot of people, to be honest.
No,
that's what I'm saying. As soon as you hold a gun,
it's a repeated theme of people trying to get out of the area and not necessarily going their way, let's say. It's that's kind of a motif, I think, throughout the film, is several people trying to flee and it not ending well.
In both ways, some trying to do it the good way and others the not so good way, and
the easy way is often the way they take, isn't it?
For you, any characters? We've not talked about Benny.
Benny was great.
Benny he's kind of the voice of good in the pairing of little Z, little Dice. He's like the angel on his shoulder, and
he's one of the good bad guys. And my favorite TV show is The Wire.
The Wire is a key comparison, I think, with this film.
Yeah, and it's what I love about The Wire is you have the good guys, you have the bad guys on the good side, and you have the on the reverse as well. And Benny is a good bad guy, and everyone loves him. But you know, he has a gun, and you know he'll get the priests to his leaving party, as well as the hoods, as well as everyone who's all the disco kids, and you can see that. And he's such a vibrant character, but because he holds a gun, there's no way it can end well for him.
But like The Wire, there aren't necessarily, I wouldn't say necessarily, there's good people and bad people. Everyone's a shade of grey.
Yeah.
And I do think that's the case here as well, that everyone morally compromises at some level, some more than others. Like little Dice, well, he's a little psychopath, isn't he, at the start? But everyone's on the scale of on a scale of morality, I guess.
He's the most insane one. He's the most...
Yeah, he's the most like wild child of the bunch, yeah.
But he's a great character, though, because he properly captures your attention. Every time he's on screen, you're like, what's he going to do?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
You're kind of on tenterhooks every time he's on screen.
And that great montage, which there's that montage of him getting older, which is shown through him shooting people from like a low level.
Yeah.
It definitely felt like the trunk shots in Tarantino films, but it was a very stylishly done montage to see this guy grow up. It was, I mean, I hadn't seen the same thing done exactly like that. It was quite...
I think that's why the cinematography thing comes into play, because there are a lot of stylish elements, like the transformation of the apartment in over 15 years, like you said, the story of him, this guy, character growing up pretty much from the same shots.
Mm. A very low angle, sort of
going from looking up at him.
Gangster shot.
It's and how the stories are portrayed is like, this is the story of Knockout Ned in succinct vignettes, and then it carries on with the rest of the story. So you're up to speed with Knockout Ned. You know his history, you know why he got to this point, and you know what his morals are going forward. And those kind of little snippets are super cool in this, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's no accident that we've ended up talking so much about the cinematography and the cinematographer as well, and not having mentioned the director, because I think he went on to direct a number of
Fernando Meirelles
comparatively quite bland films.
Mainly because we probably would have pronounced it wrong. That was the danger.
Like I just did there.
Yeah, no, I think
Fernando Meirelles.
He did The Constant Gardener. That was
his next film, his big Oscar film. And then I think the last thing I saw of his was called 360, which was not particularly exciting.
Do you think nowadays he would have been swept up into the Marvel universe?
Possibly, or I don't know. I think there's, you have people like Alfonso Cuarón doing things like Gravity and pushing that, and Iñárritu is doing really kind of interesting stuff. And it just seemed like, I guess Blindness is a bit more of a high concept.
Oh, that was it? Oh, I remember that was... Yeah. I've heard a lot of people slag off the film, but I loved it.
I saw it when it came out and then have not really thought about it since.
It's not a repeat watch.
Is it? No, okay.
It was very heavy, I remember, but I remember at the time thinking, wow, that was something.
What's Blindness out the Fernando film?
Yeah.
Mm, about blindness.
Mm. Well, there's also a City of God 10 years later thing.
A TV show, right?
I think the BBC did something, and then there is a City of Men.
Yeah, the TV show.
I don't think the TV series was really as successful.
So did he make that more recently? He went back to the world? Or?
Well, I think it was a film, or it may have just been that the BBC revisited.
I think they did a TV series follow-up and a follow-up film. Yeah, they tried them both, you know, see what works.
Yeah, but I haven't seen that, but I was sort of reading the bit on the BBC about it, so I thought they'd maybe made a documentary and they sort of went and met with some of the characters and saw how things had changed, or they sort of found out that they hadn't really changed that much.
Cool. Well, I think it's a great time to head on to the scores and see what we really thought in black and white.
So these are our special scores.
Yeah. So I should say, Adam, I'm not sure if you know this, but the scores for Flick, with the scores are kind of inspired by the Little White Lies scoring system.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
So should I explain that, or have you explained that already? Or
well, we're going to do a special, since you're here, we're going to do a special scoring round for Little White Lies in honour of yourself. But so the kind of split level scoring system that goes into it is kind of like came from you guys as a fan of the mag. Helen, do you want to explain the...
So recommendability, all these are out of 5. So how likely are you to recommend this to someone? Or I sort of see it as your enjoyment level a little bit as well. And we'll start with you, Chris, because it was your choice.
I'm going to give this a solid 4. I think it's a film that people should give a watch. It's 2 hours, but it flies by. And I think it's worth people giving it some time and attention, especially if they haven't seen it. It's definitely one to watch.
Adam?
I'm just trying to think, like, who I would recommend this film to. It's a film that was probably, as I say, I saw it in college, so it wasn't as much as it was recommended to me, but I'm not sure that there was anyone among my peers at the time who I would have recommended it to.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I just, not that many of my friends were, I guess, into the types of films I was at that point, but...
Were they watching, like, Waterboy?
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I was as well.
But, yeah.
So I think I'd go for like a 3.
Okay. Helen.
A solid 3.
Yeah.
I'd go a 5. I think if you haven't seen this, what are you doing? Go and see it. Yeah, I'd recommend this to everyone.
I guess you have got to be aware. Some people just do not like subtitles.
Yeah.
I know, but so you said, still
I think you have to know your audience.
Yeah. Well,
I think the way people take to this score is quite interesting, because I like to take into account who I would recommend it to, the way that Adam kind of does. Helen, you prefer to say, I loved it so much, I would tell everyone, even if they...
I think it's great.
...unlikely to listen to it. So I tend to take into
account... I'm the more generous marker, aren't I?
Yeah, we found that recently.
Good cop, bad cop.
Yeah.
And I tend to take into account who I'd recommend it to. And bearing that in mind, level of violence and the fact it's got subtitles, I'm going to give it 4.75, because... I want to recommend it to as many people as possible. My parents, I wouldn't recommend it to. And there's people who are hard, you know, just...
I wouldn't recommend it to children, obviously.
Well, okay. But I wouldn't recommend it to people who...
I recommend to anyone over the certificate that it's rated of us.
Okay.
I think you could be under the certificate, let's be honest.
But there's people who...
Not my much.
Like you say, people who just steadfast don't like subtitles. And for that, I couldn't be asked. But in spite of that, I think 4.75 is...
It's very specific.
Yeah. Repeat viewing score, Chris, how often?
Because we've all seen this before, haven't we? No one's come fresh to it.
Yeah, I saw it a couple of times at cinema, a few times on DVD. Yeah, but like I say, I was a film student when this came out,
right,
and I liked crime films, and I was wowed. I was generally wowed, and I was at the time recommending it to everyone I came across. But it's not an everyday film. It's not, I mean, it flies by, but it's not the kind of film you will watch that often. Like we said, I think we all seem to have seen it years ago and not seen it a lot since. Mm. I guess that's quite telling in the repeat view score. But it is a feast for the eyes. It is a film worth seeing. Just once every few years, dig it back out. So,
how does that work out of 5?
3.
Adam?
Yeah, I think this is the third time in total I've seen the film.
Okay.
And I don't think anything quite beats the first viewing of it. But watching it a third time now, I definitely appreciated the kind of craftsmanship behind it more. So I'm going to go 4 for this.
Helen?
This is the third time, maybe third or fourth, and it had been the biggest gap was between the last viewing and this one. And I think it deserves at least 2 watches. Mm-hmm. And I would watch it again. And I think you do get a little bit of something different each time you watch it, because once you've kind of been blown away with it the second time, you can kind of concentrate a little bit more on other things that are going on. So I'm going to go for a 4.
Cool. Yeah, I'm a 4 as well. I think I it's probably been like yourself. It's been like a decade since I last saw it. And that's simply the fact that I've not had a DVD player in my in my residence for that time. So it's great. This is exactly
it's
why.
It's great. It's on Netflix.
It's great. It's on Netflix. Mm. I will watch it again. And I've watched it at least 8 times, maybe towards 10 times. This is I loved it when it first came out.
That's you know, for in the modern age, that's a lot.
Yeah.
You know, now if you see a film twice, normally that means you love it.
But this is the problem of like the Netflix model, and it's the disposability of film so much.
I will say that Netflix is certainly in the UK, their world cinema offering is quite poor, I think. And actually, this is, it kind of ticks quite a few boxes for them, I think, because it's entertaining and violent and like Tarantino-esque. Mm-hmm. And actually also it gives you a bit of an education into a world and a kind of mode of filmmaking as well. Like,
yeah.
I think it's like this and maybe Battle Royale, and there's not really much on there. But,
is Battle Royale still on there?
Maybe not now, but yeah. It was for a while.
It might have been killed off. Boom. Yeah. Sorry.
So 4 for repeat viewing. Small screen score. We've talked a bit about the cinematography here, and this kind of relates to how much you feel you may have missed out from not watching in a cinema, or you think it's better. Is it suited well to a Netflix platform, i.e. TV size and...
This is the question below. That seems to cause the most confusion. So, yeah. I mean, interpret it as you will.
I mean, I did think about this question, actually, that almost in some ways this question is weighed against films that look good, that you're almost rewarded for not having that great a visual
style.
But this
is, well, you know, we're talking about films on Netflix, you see, so that's how it...
That's the
score. And also, if you've got a big TV and a big fancy sound system, you've probably got a better screen than some of the cinemas out there.
Yeah, Leicester Square's got some pitiful screens.
But one thing I'll say is subtitles are no friend of the phone watch, because I know you've mentioned sometimes you'll say, oh, what, a smaller TV or a phone. If you're watching a subtitled film on a phone...
You deserve to be slapped.
Well, it's not designed for that.
No.
And so I definitely took that into account and gave it a 2.5. The subtitles. But okay.
Adam?
I think I'm just going to go for a three for this one. I watched it on a computer screen and didn't find the experience unpleasant, but as I say, it wasn't the first time I was seeing it, so.
I'm going to go a 3 as well. I enjoyed seeing it at the cinema, but...
You saw it as well.
Yeah, but if you, it's not going to be on at cinemas again. In the chance that it does come to a local cinema.
Yeah, you can see it like the Prince Charles, maybe, when they show all the films.
But yeah, nothing smaller than your laptop, please.
So 3.
Yeah. I think that should be a general rule.
Yes.
I'm going to give it a 2.5, like yourself. I'd love to see it in the cinema. And like you said, with each viewing, you take different things out of it. And for me, this time it was like how well the shots were played and how well things are lined up. And now I appreciate the cinema craft before, because I was watching The Waterboy thinking it was shit. I used to watch Something About Mary. I never used to really appreciate the art of actually getting an image onto the screen and making it tie in with the film. I think this is a masterstroke in doing that. So it would be cool to see that on a bigger screen. Engagement score, Chris.
I did think the third act dragged a little bit slightly. I mean, there's lots of smaller stories building up to it, and then it sort of focuses on the kind of bigger picture for like the last half an hour or so, I guess.
Rocket's kind of story tying it all together, I guess.
And I think I was slightly more interested in the pieces, like the individual. It reminded me of like when I watched Gangs of New York, there was a shot where you saw the different gangs in some big place, and they all seemed much more interesting than the main film, even though I liked the film, but they're like, oh, I wanted to hear about them. And there was a certain sense of that with some of this. But you know, it's a great film that I just sat and watched without needing to pause to make a tea or anything. No, I was thoroughly engaged the whole way through. I did think it just dipped slightly, like the energy slightly got away from the film in the end. So 3.5.
3.5. Chris? Oh, sorry, Adam.
based purely on my faint memory of the first viewing.
Yeah.
I'm going to go 4.25.
You're just like enveloped by it.
I think there's a lot to keep you to keep your attention in this.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think I'm going to go for a 5. I was as engaged, I think, probably as all of the other times. And don't be put off by, I think it's 2 hours and 15 minutes, because it does just kind of...
Zooms by, doesn't it?
Zips by. I was captivated again by it.
I'm going to go 4.7 there. Yeah, because I loved it again, and I was surprised at how much I loved it. I was looking forward to a lot of the pieces that were coming, that I knew were coming. But like yourself, Chris, I think when it comes to towards the end, it didn't have the energy that the start of it did. And I think towards the end, I was waning a bit, but still high in there.
But at least it's like a whole world sort of packed with characters and stories.
Yeah.
And it is the kind of thing, I think, as you mentioned, like what we mentioned, The Wire earlier, that's done slightly better on TV these days, because it's got the time to do lots of characters and lots of stories.
Yeah.
So it's, I think that kind of played against the film slightly.
So this kind of ties in with a theme on your show where you what's it called, a TV?
Oh, TV or not TV?
Yeah.
That is the question, where we ask if the film would work as a TV show.
And do you think this would?
Well, it's been done, hasn't it? City of Men.
Well, City of Men wasn't really, I think, yeah, it was poor. But if they were to do City of Men.
Yeah, I think just you could adapt this plot into like at least like a mini series, because there's so much story, there's so many characters. Mm. And I think people could get slightly more of their due if they were given a bit more time. Yeah.
So that gives us an overall FlixWatcher score of 3.73.
It's pretty high.
Pretty high. Let down mainly because the cinematography is so good. So we small screen
too
score.
Too good. Too good. Damn good.
Too good on the screen. And because we have Adam here, we'd love to do a Little White Lies, a quick rundown. Can you give us an overview of your LWL scoring system?
I can, yeah. So we have this unique tripartite scoring system.
Oh, hold on. Tripartite.
Is that what ours is?
Tetrapartite.
Yeah, I won't pretend to know what that word really means, but it was sort of devised to sort of convey the different aspects of the movie going experience. Mm. So we have a anticipation score to begin with, an enjoyment score in the moment, and then an in retrospect score. So I kind of judge that as like being 24 hours plus after you've seen the film.
Seen it, and I think that's a really cool thing in retrospect, because sometimes I leave a cinema and I have no idea what I feel about it. There's kind of a glow, whether it's positive or negative, and it takes some time to unpick the bits out of it. So I think that, in retrospect, is one I think is really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, we found recently that it kind of tends to mess up certain online aggregation websites, because they don't know what to sort of do with it, so which is always fun. But yeah, they're all out of 5 as well.
So do you want to lead us in the LWL scores for yourself for City of God?
Yeah, I guess anticipation would be a strange one for this. So... I mean, trying to put myself where I was when I first saw it, I'd say maybe a 3.
Okay.
As I say, not knowing the director or you know, not being particularly au fait with like Brazilian cinema. So 3, and then probably 4 and 4 for enjoyment and in retrospect.
Chris?
So I was really anticipating watching this again because I used to love the film so much. I'm going to give it a 5 on anticipation. Is engagement the next one?
Yeah.
4, because it's a solidly...
Enjoyment.
No, oh, yeah. 4 is a solidly enjoyable film to watch. There's so much to like about the film, visually, you know, story, characters. And what was the final one, sorry?
In retrospect.
I'll give it a 4 as well. In retrospect.
So anticipation. Initially, I was a bit like, and then I was like, oh, actually, I did really like this. So 4. Enjoyment, I gave either a 5 or a 0 because... Some bits I really couldn't enjoy, the bits that were horrible and really horrible. And then there was bits like the bit where he accidentally smokes a girl's number.
Wasn't accidentally, it was just showing how much of a...
Do you think it was? I thought it was accidental.
Yeah,
actually.
Accidentally. Yeah, okay. You wouldn't.
Because he was like, hey, I've got some papers and just...
So bits like that are
think
brilliant.
Just showing how much of a lad he is.
That's what I thought. I just thought it was kind of like...
No.
Especially not Rocket. He wasn't that kind of guy. He wasn't a lad. He was just...
He wouldn't have realised. He would have put his hand in his pocket when he got home and went, where's the number?
Okay.
Oh, man, and then maybe shed a tear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Here. Yeah, just the one. You know,
he would. So I don't know. How do I? Because I didn't enjoy the horrible bits, obviously.
Two and a half. Split the difference.
I enjoyed the whole thing as what it is. But I feel that I can't say I enjoy the horrible bits.
I think the word enjoyment can be, maybe a bit distracting from this, because we found this quite recently discussing certain films on our podcast. And when we did Mother, when that came out,
that's
a few months ago.
That's the Truth and Movies podcast.
Which is a very interesting film, but it's not a film it's I describe enjoyment. As being enjoyable.
Exactly,
and
yeah.
That's one of the films I was thinking about in terms of in retrospect, because during the time it's like, fucking hell, what the hell is this? But then after coming out of it, I'm like, that's actually a fucking brilliant film, how it's put together, and I want to enjoy it.
Yeah, we tend to use the in retrospect score as like the final, you know, score if we have to give one, so... Yeah. I would say just it's your kind of instinctive feeling or response in the moment.
And go down the middle then, 2.5. And then in retrospect, 5.
So I was really looking forward to watching this again. I hadn't seen it for like best part of a decade. Mm-hmm. So it is, 5 for anticipation. Enjoyment, 4.5. Can you go 0.5 in
it? We don't, but 4. You're more than welcome to.
No, I'm going to stick to your system. Yeah, 4 for anticipation. And in retrospect,
was that 4 for enjoyment as well?
Yeah, right. 4 for enjoyment. Sorry, yeah. And I'd say 4 for in retrospect.
All fours.
Yeah.
No.
Five, four.
I think we should caveat this by saying that all ranking systems are totally meaningless and arbitrary anyway. So
yeah, more or less. Yeah.
Much like Netflix's thumbs up, thumbs down.
do they still do that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it wrong that I watch this on DVD? Am I getting asked to leave?
No. It's fine. So we reached out to our Twitter fans and asked for what they thought. Do you want to read the top one, Helen?
Yeah, so this is from John Lunny. This is John Lunny, past guest.
Friend of the show, yeah.
And review is, it probably has to be 5 out of 5 for me, but now I've watched it so many times, I'm not sure I will ever watch it again.
Yeah.
But no stars, John. Where's your stars?
So at the end...
Oh.
It says 5 out of 5.
Oh, yeah.
And then he says closer to 10 out of 5. Oh, no, that's how many times he's watched it, sorry.
Yeah,
reading is not my strong spot.
So then we have Cinematographer's Party. Chris Radham, do you want to read their score? What they?
Yeah, they say definitely one of my favourite foreign films, maybe 4 stars. An important film nonetheless, which I guess it probably is for a lot of people.
Absolutely. Chris, next one, Sudden Double Deep, SDD Film, at SDD Film Podcast.
I've listened to their show, actually. They're a good show.
Absolutely.
I recommend. They said, easily one of the best films we've covered on our show. Definitely one of the best films released in the 21st century. All the stars, all the ratings.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Dazzling review from SDD.
Then we have Kino Press, absolutely 5 stars. Probably in my top 5 foreign language films. Arguably top 20 overall. I think certainly one of the top 5 foreign films, if that's a way to delineate films, which I think is a bit pointless, because I think just films should be films. Top 20, probably not, but it's high. It's one I regard quite very highly. And Shitegeist, another friend of the show. Helen, do you want to take Shitegeist?
Believe the hype, 5 stars.
So these guys actually rated it a bit higher than we did overall. But
to be fair, I think I brought the ratings down, even though I love the film. So people listening probably hate me.
No, they do. They'll come and find you.
I criticise because I love.
Can you let us know where they can find you to
send all the hate?
Mm. On Twitter, I'm at ERR Podcast.
Well, it's a good job we're going to link to that in the notes, because that's, dude.
You know me. It. I don't know it. That's clear.
Click on the link. And Adam?
We're just at LW Lies. Truth Movies is the name of the podcast, but that doesn't have its own Twitter handle. Yeah.
Fantastic. Thanks, guys, for coming on.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah,
thanks.
Cheers. Thank you. Bye.
See ya.
Thanks for listening. You can find all of the episodes on our website, flixwatcher.tv. Want to give us your 5-star review? Follow us at flixwatcherpod on Twitter. Big shout out to our editor, Brendan Russell, for all his awesome editing skills. And thanks, as always, to the mighty people for their tunes.